Kennedy, Laurie, and Napster ran through the maze of corridors in the basement of the museum. The way to the main display halls was long and twisting. Down 15 stairs, then up 12 stairs, round 5 different corners, and along 6 corridors, all of which looked exactly the same. The 3 squad members knew the complicated route like the backs of their hands, but anyone who didn't know the way usually got very lost, unless they had a long ball of string trailing after them, unlikely, or had left a trail of breadcrumbs, very unlikely. The doorway to the Egyptian zone had 2 towering pillars of sandstone, as if marking the entrance to a chamber within a pyramid. In the first room, the team found display cases that burst with color. These held jewelry with sparkling blue, red, and green gems. At the center of the display was a golden headdress studded with the most striking precious stones. The information board in the display case declared that this was Pharaoh Shaneb's headdress, one of the museum's greatest treasures. The next room in the Egyptian zone seemed filled with gold. In the center was the zone's most dramatic piece, the golden mummy casket of Pharaoh Shaneb. The Egyptian zone was closed to museum visitors for a few days while the room was being repainted. So all was quiet, apart from a man painting on scaffolding at the far side of the room. Madagascar, the museum director, was there, and a third person who was crouched beside the mummy casket, a gray-haired man with glasses. "I'd like you to meet Professor Peter Jiptex," said Magda. "He researches ancient Egypt. He was looking at the pharaoh's casket and has made the most amazing discovery. It's a secret message from thousands of years ago." And so the story begins in Museum Mystery Squad and the Case of the Hidden Hieroglyphics by Mike Nicholson. As we know, museums are wondrous places and spaces, not just because of all the dramatic staircases and inviting, endlessly beckoning halls and object-filled rooms. They're places to stimulate our curiosity, to ask us questions, to suggest answers, pull us along on adventures we couldn't even have predicted. Take, for example, the Everhart Museum in Scranton. We've just heard about a fictional museum and its Egyptian artifacts, including the Pharaoh's casket. Well, the Everhart has in its collection a panel from an Egyptian sarcophagus, polychrome wood, decorated with hieroglyphics. No secret here, though. We're told the hieroglyphics express a prayer for the man who has died, asking that he have plenty of food in the afterworld. It's interacting with ancient artifacts, as well as 20th century artworks, glittering glass made in Wayne County, and even making our own pieces in classes of all kinds. The Everhart Museum in Scranton will reopen February 1st after its annual January closing for maintenance and such. And we had a visit from curator Neshka Pfeiffer, assistant programming manager Sarah Sutton, and award-winning artist Bill Tightsworth, taking us behind the scenes. Neshka Pfeiffer.
This year, besides, you know, some of the renovations that we're planning, there's also been kind of a reconfiguration of a lot of the programming that's taking place. Of course, we're still going to continue having all sorts of programs for the little ones, the kids and teenagers and so forth, but we're re-energizing adult programming. And so there's going to be a lot of different variations on some of the things that are being offered, including getting classes and interacting with the collections in ways that people haven't had an opportunity to do with before. And we actually have a brand new staff member who started just late last year.
Hello.
Welcome, Sarah. What are your responsibilities?
So I am the educational program coordinator at the Everhart Museum. So I basically am helping to come up with new educational programs, to guide some tours for school groups, and basically just bring the public into the museum in new and dynamic ways other than just the tours and the exhibition, to do some programming with them.
And what in your background has prepared you to do that? Why do you love to do that kind of work?
Well, my background is in public history, so really I've been trained to take these bigger conversations that are happening in the history world and then make them accessible to the everyday person and make everyone feel comfortable learning about history, learning about their heritage, and learning about art. So really, I feel very comfortable in this new role and doing programming. It's really my background's in history, but at the Everhart, we do way more than history. We also have the art and the natural history and the science. So I'm really able to stretch my wings here more than before, I think.
What struck you? Were you surprised to see dinosaur bones?
Yes and no. I mean, I was surprised because I guess when you think of Scranton, you don't necessarily think of dinosaurs. You typically think of coal and heritage along those lines. But the thing that struck me the most was the fossil rocks and minerals gallery. That really, I'm into it. I really liked it. So I think that's what intrigued me the most about the Everhart is I'm used to being in art galleries and museums, but I think the fossils and the rocks really was something unique to the area.
So what kinds of things are percolating for you now?
I think what's on my mind for 2018 is creating programs that are more inclusive. I think something that the Everhart is really wonderful at is talking about topics that are really broad and having something that everyone can be interested in. So I think in 2018, we want to continue that and foster that sort of education where everyone can feel comfortable and everyone can feel interested. There's something for everyone.
I think there's a lot of intrigue that people feel. You know, a lot of museums are depicted in film or in television, and so people think they might get a glimpse of the way we do things behind the scenes. And I think what's really great is that some of these programs that coming up are actually going to address how we actually really do things. So we're sort of peeling back the curtain a little bit in the same way that Charles Wilson Peale did in that fabulous painting of the First American Museum. And you really then will get a sense of, you know, the diversity of things that we have. I mean, the natural history collections or natural science collections are definitely dear to my heart, as they seem to be already to a newbie like Sarah, which is great. But a lot of people identify us as an art museum. And so constantly the most nostalgic things that people remember, you know, are certain paintings like The Young Artist by John Chumley or Afternoon Tea by Frances Coates Jones. So all of those are things that we want people to be nostalgic and remember and have as their special little pocket kind of gift that they can remember when they think about the museum. But we kind of want people to understand also a little bit better about what it is that we do and why do we do it and why do we have all these diverse collections and what can they tell us about the cultures that made them, regardless of where in the world they are, and maybe make those things relatable to us. So they may not be things that we're used to seeing in our own lives, but they actually represent something that another person in another culture can relate to. You know, we're human, so we have these connections and we can understand about what it's like to go through an initiation or some sort of ceremony that is important to your life, or you're, you know, passing away, and how do you acknowledge that? How does that happen in your culture? So these are the kind, and quite frankly, we also eat and drink. So there's also a lot of that that happens. So I think these are all things that the programs department, including Sarah, you know, they're trying to figure out what are some new ways that we can approach these things, and also in the act of creation.
And we happen to have a very active creator at the table. Bill, it's wonderful to have you here again. How are you fitting into this kind of pattern for the Everhart?
I hope smoothly. I talked to Stephanie Colarusso a couple months ago. I was looking for a venue for a new watercolor program that I'm road testing, and she made me welcome there at this point, so I'm hoping to have it fly there.
Well, you are a remarkably accomplished artist in your own right and celebrated well outside the boundaries of our area, and you go out and paint outside the area and en plein air. And what have you distilled from all of that into this program that you're excited about?
The course I'm offering right now is called Watercolor Essentials. And the genesis of it was that Renee and I, my wife Renee, also an artist, came back from Maine in the fall of 2016 and were getting ready to resume our studio classes in Moscow. And we decided to redo them, like, from the ground up, really. And so I've been doing a lot of studying in the literature of art instruction, going back, like way back to the California School and people like Elliot O'Hara, who was one of the first watercolorists ever to be made a full academician in the National Academy of Design. So these guys have all left a lot of information that if you dig down, you can find, you might say secrets or tips or something. Anyways, but that was one part of it, that I was trying to find curriculum stuff. But the other thing was that I noticed that some of our students, one in particular, a young woman, very talented, didn't actually know what a flat wash is, for example. So in a sense, the watercolor essentials, the way it ended up, is that it's excellent for beginners, I think, but it's also excellent for, as a tune-up for people with a lot of experience. And it's really condensed, and I think it covers everything pretty well in a really condensed form.
When do you start?
We start on February 1st. The educational and a lot of the activities are all going to be on Thursday evenings. Is that right, Neshka?
Yes.
Thursday evenings, there will be things going on all over the museum, not just in the classroom, as I understand it. My class will meet on Thursday evenings, beginning February 1st, and going for 4 weeks, 4 Thursdays in February.
Both Bill and Renee, but Bill as well, particularly since he'll be teaching these classes, everyone enjoys their classes. I mean, they're really desirable teachers to be taught by. So I think it's really an opportunity for people to understand watercolor in a different way, perhaps, because if these artists are new to them and some of these terms maybe they thought they knew what that was, but that's something, you know, to give them the actual vocabulary, it really increases their understanding when the next time they look at someone else's watercolor. I think it's also important too. So, and to me, I have always been impressed particularly by how unusual watercolor is and working with negative space and understanding that it's a different medium than when you're applying paint of another type. And so I just think it's really a beautiful medium. And if you already have some talent into doing it, you should really understand the vocabulary of it.
And I think it is also wonderful for somebody who is a mature artist to know as much as you do and then be curious to go back into the tradition and find out what they were talking about and how they were presenting things at an earlier stage.
Absolutely. It was a huge bonus for me. I learned. I learned constantly. I never stopped learning. But there was a huge spurt of research and learning when I started looking into this for watercolor essentials. I totally recommend it for anybody, no matter what level they're at.
Well, and even I think often when we're training, whatever that is, whether, you know, for Sarah it's history or for me it's museum-oriented work or for Bill it's painting or with watercolors, it's always great as you develop your skills, it becomes muscle memory, right? But it's actually kind of good to go cyclically back to the beginning a little bit because you can't possibly, your brain can't possibly remember everything that you may have been exposed to. But if you've not been exposed to it and new research has elucidated new information and contextualized it for you and syncretized it in a way that you're building, the building blocks kind of grow. And so I think that's also kind of a way that some of the other programs that we've got planned are hopefully going to get people thinking about the museum differently. And people, you know, use the museum subjects for painting and various types of artwork. So we're hoping they'll also be interested in doing that too, along with the training that they receive with Bill.
It would be good, wouldn't it, Bill, to do classes in a museum in that
Absolutely.
Way?
Absolutely. In fact, you mentioned favorite things that you wish everyone had. There was a watercolor that I saw way back a long time ago, and I've never seen it again. I hope the museum still has it. It was a pretty good sized one, maybe about 18 by 24, about this big for the TV people. It was of snowdrops. Do you know it?
I'm pretty sure I've seen it.
One of these days I'm going to make arrangements with you to show it to me. I'd love to see it again. I really would.
It's almost time for the snowdrops.
Yes, it is.
There's a case where the fact that you encountered that painting at the Everhart, that you've held on to it, and it's been in your imagination since then.
And it was way before I ever picked up a watercolor brush. So maybe that was a motivator.
Here. Well, if we can figure it out, maybe we can have it, you know, get showcased in one of your classes and pull it out.
And so, Sarah, that's one of the options. What else do you have on offer?
Yes, so one of the newest programs that I'm the most excited about is going to be called Tête-à-Tête, an Everhart Conversation. We are going to have this new quarterly series called Tête-à-Tête, and it's really inspired by our book club, Everhart Reads. The idea was to take these great conversations that were happening in our book club meetings and really bring them to the museum and the public in a bigger way. So to do this, we have decided to choose quarterly themes for our book club book choices. So each month for our book club, we'll be having a book that corresponds with the quarterly theme. And then that theme also plays into Tête-à-Tête, our conversational series. So we're going to bring a speaker into the museum. The first one is actually February 8th from 6 to 7 p.m. And we will be able to interact with people in real time because we will be streaming it on Facebook Live. So to bring this back to the book club, at the book club, this new idea to make it more accessible to the public and to make people feel more comfortable in the book club, we're going to be live tweeting on our Twitter account, the Everhart Museum's Twitter account. So if you don't feel comfortable coming to the book club or reading the books with us, you can participate in the conversation on Twitter. By the same token, if you don't feel comfortable coming to our conversational series at the museum called Tete-a-Tete, an Everhart conversation, you can tune in on Facebook Live, and we'll be streaming the conversation, and you can give us questions, we'll refer back to it, and we'll be interacting with you that way. So our first topic is actually going to be on the environment and on environmental changes. Our speaker is Bernie McGurl, who is the executive director of the Lackawanna River Conservation Association. He will be leading the conversation with a 15 to 20 minute discussion about the artist John Willard Rott and the geography of his art, and then lead it into the current environmental issues facing northeastern Pennsylvania. So I think the real idea here is to have an open discussion with the public, a place where you can feel comfortable and confident learning new ideas, voicing your opinion about a very specific topic, and then also to be interacting with people all around the world on Facebook in real time. So that's the idea, and we're really hoping that we have a good turnout for the first one for Bernie, because he's a really great and enticing speaker, and he has a lot to say about this area and the environment. We actually just had a conversation with Bernie about Tete-a-Tete and what he wanted to dive into with it. And he is very interested in Rott, and which we have on exhibit at the museum. And he wants to talk about the kind of changes that Rott saw in northeastern Pennsylvania in his time, and then kind of talk about the changes that we are seeing now, both with the coal industry and now moving into the gas and oil industry streams and the runoff there, and just these problems that seem to keep being cyclical and coming back in these big decision times that we're facing. So I think the idea of environmental change is really what the Tete-a-Tete will focus about for the first one. Just going back to the book club, our book club is called Everhart Reads. It's been going on for over 10 years now. It's very active. There's a lot of new people coming in the last year, which is great. We meet the first Thursday of every month. It's free. And our first meeting is going to be February 1st. First of the year is February 1st. And we are reading the book called The Road by Cormac McCarthy. It is a speculative fiction book. It goes along with our environmental theme. And it's really a Pulitzer Prize winning novel about kind of the end of times and what happens when we treat the environment a certain way, things like that. A little dark, but I think the club is liking it so far so good. So it'll be interesting to see the crossover between our book club conversations 1 week and then the following having that tete-a-tete conversation with the larger public. So I think that'll be really great. So that's from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Everhart Museum this month. It might be changing around a little bit, but for the first month, it is going to be at the Everhart Museum in Scranton. We have another program coming up called Paint and Pose. So we've partnered with Narame Yoga Studio to bring an evening of yoga and art to the museum. So every third Thursday, we will be hosting a gentle flow yoga class followed by a beginner's painting class. So it's bring your own mat, but we do have the art supplies. It's from 6 to 8:30, and the first class is February 15th. So you do have to pre-register for this, and that's on our website, and you can pay online via PayPal on the Everhart Museum's website. I'm excited about Paint and Pose because we did a partnership with Narame Yoga in the past, had a great turnout. It was a lot of fun, and it's a really nice creative outlet to use your mind and body in one way and to do the yoga and then to immediately follow it creatively with the artistic outlet. It was a lot of fun. So that's a good program to look out for. So that's going to be February 15th, and then the next one after that is March 15th. So yeah, again, we have a lot going on. Every Thursday is something new and different at the museum. So if you look at our website every Thursday, if you're looking for something to do. Finally, our last program is called Open Studio for Adults. Our Open Studio is a time set aside on the last Thursday of every month, not necessarily the fourth Thursday, but whatever the last Thursday is going to be, from 6 to 8 p.m. We are opening up this space for artists, both amateur and professional, to connect, create, and share ideas. So the idea is to just have an open studio time for artists to either collaborate or not. Just, I know a lot of people are looking for studio space, and we really want to open our doors and allow you to be inspired by our art, which we will have there for you to see, and then also have the space to really be as creative and messy as you want to be. You must bring your own supplies, so you can come once a month and collaborate with other artists, use our studio space, be inspired by our art, and there's also going to be a 10 to 15 minute guided conversation before starting with an artist in residence at the museum to talk about either our collection or a specific artistic technique. That's really kind of up in the air as far as when you get there, what they're going to be talking about. It's not scheduled. It's really supposed to be very open and go with the flow. So if you want to come and collaborate and speak to an artist in residence at the museum, whether you're an amateur or professional, it's supposed to be that time open to the public to make us really that place for local artists to feel comfortable and accepted.
And what was that word you were using, Neshka?
That's right, a Wunderkammer. The museum, for anyone who doesn't know, it's a kind of a, well, it's a German term called Wunder Cabinet, which actually was what some of the earliest museums were called when very wealthy aristocrats in Germany were collecting things from all over the world that would be brought to them in their fabulous manses and mansions and castles and where whatever domicile they had. And these special rooms would have these wonderful collections of natural history, of art, of historic artifacts. So the Neverhart, as a general museum, because we have so many different things, really kind of is modeled a little bit on that Wunderkammer concept, that cabinet of curiosities. And there's a little bit of that aesthetic in some of our natural history rooms. And a lot of people have a lot of nostalgia for that. And any museology course you take when you're learning about museums or the history of museums very much talks about Wunderkammer and why you should think about them as spaces, not just for cataloging things, but also for inspiration and to sort of see the diversity of the natural world and the artistic world. And so the series will give visitors an opportunity to see things that I've brought out from storage that are not typically on display. And so generally they're things that are more delicate, can't really handle being out for long periods of time in exhibition. Sometimes they've been able to be brought out for a temporary exhibition, but they're not things that are out all the time. So because we have sort of a lot of portraits going on in the spring, we have a few different ceramics that sort of feature imagery of people. And so those are the things that are going to get pulled out. So we're going to look at all sorts of ceramics that we have in the collection. So that means pottery for anyone who's not a ceramics nerd, you know, things that are made with clay. So there's a variety of things that we have in the collection that feature that. And some of the other subjects that we'll be talking about will include our herbarium, which is a fancy word for a collection of historic plants, and textiles, which is a fancy word for costume and fabrics. And then the last session will be on our entomology collection, or our insects, our bugs.
I'm very excited. This is something I've been looking forward to. I love Cabinets of Curiosity. I think it's a way for Neshka to put our permanent collection into conversation with our temporary exhibitions beautifully. And I think it's gonna draw, I think, a lot of younger people, a younger audience, and people who have never seen the Everhart like this before. It really is peeking behind the veil, so to speak, at what we have to offer.
Sarah Sutton, Educational Programming Manager, Curator Neshka Pfeiffer, and award-winning watercolor artist Bill Tightsworth, speaking with us about what's in the offing at the Everhart Museum of Natural History, Science, and Art, Naog Park in Scranton, as we continue in the new year. We have Watercolor Essentials with Bill Tightsworth beginning February 1st. Everhart Reads, the book club, will begin meeting again February 1st, and many other things that we've spoken about and not spoken about, all on the web, everhart-museum.org, everhart-museum.org, and Everhart is spelled E-V-E-R-H-A-R-T, Naog Park in Scranton. The programs all listed, and you'll also be able to see that opening on February 2nd, two exhibitions, Making Faces, a retrospective of drawings and paintings by well-known, celebrated caricature artist John Casht, who is from our region, who lives in our area, and he will be our guest on Art Scene
in the weeks to come. Also, Lenny Levinson Wiener Park Bench Stories, both exhibits opening February 2nd. And so all that information you can find on the Everhart Museum website, everhart-museum.org.